This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. My guest today is Esther Heineman, who's on the board of directors of the nonprofit group Women for Afghan Women. Esther Heineman, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
Tell me, what are the goals of your organization, Women for Afghan Women? Sounds obvious, but why don't you spell them out?
Well, we're basically to provide access to justice for women in Afghanistan. We also have a small community outreach program in New York City for conservative women immigrants from Afghanistan. But the bulk of the work we do is in Afghanistan.
And tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in this issue.
Well, I was an academic until 2001.
Where did you teach?
I taught at the Brooklyn campus of Long Island University.
And what did you teach?
I taught literature and women's studies. Hmm. And in the late 90s, there was a kind of effort to help women in Afghanistan because there was a lot of publicity about their situation under the Taliban. And there were many documents sent around, mainly by the Feminist Majority Foundation, to ask the U.S. government to help women in Afghanistan. And academics got these by email and were asked to sign them and send them off. Most of us didn't know where they were going, really, or what effect they would have. But it turns out that these petitions convinced President Clinton not to recognize the Taliban as the official government of Afghanistan. So they had a huge impact. And as somebody who was interested in women's issues, women's rights in the world, I followed all the news about women in Afghanistan and what they were experiencing. I actually retired 10 days before 9/11 and started going to meetings that were held in New York about women in Afghanistan and whether the United States should enter the country. And at one of these meetings, I met a group of women who had founded Women for Afghan Women 6 months before 9/11 and got involved with them.
And what were they telling you about the condition of women under the Taliban rule prior to 9/11?
Well, they emphasized the horrors that women experienced. Women couldn't go out alone. They had to be accompanied by a maram. Somebody in their family whom they could not marry. They could not go out even with
a male.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They couldn't go out with a male who they might have been able to marry. They couldn't work. They had to be fully covered. Women were killed, beaten in public. It was a horror story for women.
And then 9/11 happened and you joined up with this group?
Yes, I joined up and transformed my life, basically. I had wanted to get involved in some organization that focused on women's rights before I retired, but the large organizations I applied to weren't really interested in me, I was amazed to find out. And it turns out that where I really belonged was with a grassroots organization. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, is a grassroots organization.
I'm speaking with Esther Heineman. She's on the board of directors of the nonprofit group Women for Afghan Women. Were you surprised at 9/11?
Well, yes. I lived, I could see the World Trade Center from the corner of my street. Everybody was shocked, is the word, more than surprised. It was horrifying.
You were there in New York?
I was in New York. I heard the explosions and turned on the television to see what had happened.
It must have been awful, I think, for those of us who weren't living in New York. The experience was shocking still, but not in that same visceral way. And so you got more and more involved with the organization, and were you in favor of the U.S. war against Afghanistan at the outset?
I was in favor of getting the Taliban out of Afghanistan because I saw no other way of freeing women from the subjugation.
And how do you assess the war?
I don't think it's been I can't call it a success. It was for a while when the Taliban were ousted from the country, but then the troops went to Iraq, and slowly the Taliban started coming back. Now they're all over the country, and the security is terrible. I, for example, just came back from 4 months in Afghanistan, and I had to stay in Kabul except for a quick trip by plane to Mazar. It was not safe for me to drive to many of the provinces that I've driven to in the past.
How many times have you been to Afghanistan?
I don't know, maybe 8, 7. I'm not sure.
And what was it like on this last trip, other than the fact that security was so bad?
Well, there were some positive signs of progress in Afghanistan, and that's why the organization is trying to arrange these speaking engagements, because we feel that the American public are making decisions about Afghanistan without any information about what's actually going on there. And what we're trying to emphasize is the fact that, contrary to what the media has said, there has been progress on women's rights in Afghanistan. And we can support that statement with facts. This is not just a vague idea.
Well, what are those facts then?
Well, we have, for example, we've been doing this kind of work in Afghanistan since 2006 and 2007, when we opened our first family guidance center in Kabul. And since 2007, we've expanded the family guidance center to 8 provinces. So we have 8 shelters for women in Afghanistan, and other NGOs have shelters for women in Afghanistan. This is great progress. Shelters didn't open in America till the second half of the 20th century. So it's the shelters. We've helped over 6,000 women. We only open our shelters in provinces where the people ask us to come. We are asked to open shelters by governors and other government officials. And we're welcomed and we're protected by the Afghan people. So this is progress in this country, and Americans don't know about it. We have other facilities. We have a halfway house and transitional houses for women who leave prisons and the shelters and have no safe place to go. We train them in income-generating activities, and so they can lead independent lives. We have a children's support center where we take children who have been living in prisons with their incarcerated mothers. We educate them. In all of our facilities, we have educational projects for women. All of this is immense progress in a very short time.
Tell me, you mentioned education, Esther Heinemann. What is the status of girls being able to go to school in Afghanistan now? Because, of course, the Taliban were against that, to say the least.
Well, the Afghan government, the Ministry of Education, has made substantial progress in educating girls. Millions of girls are now in school. Maybe 3.5 million girls are in school. But there are also many millions of girls who can't go to school. And they can't go to school for a number of reasons. There aren't schools where they live, or the schools are so far away from their villages that it's not safe for them to get to the schools. And there's a terrible lack of teachers, since only females can teach girls. And there aren't that many female teachers in Afghanistan. Little girls go to school and they find that another student in a higher grade is teaching them. So they drop out. And there's such dire poverty in Afghanistan that families can't afford to buy school supplies and uniforms for their daughters. So a huge amount of work needs to be done to get these little girls in school. This is a major issue in Afghanistan.
I'm speaking with Esther Heineman. She's on the board of directors of the nonprofit group Women for Afghan Women. She's been to Afghanistan more than a half dozen times. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor of the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio, and I thank you for listening. Karzai. Karzai is a really mixed bag from where I sit, which is Madison, Wisconsin. I haven't been to Afghanistan more, a half dozen times. I haven't been there once. So maybe you have a different interpretation of him. But from what I read, he's led a government that's been very corrupt and is very unpopular. And the thing that disturbed me most was his signing on to this Sharia family law edict by the Islamic clerics in Afghanistan that said it was okay under Sharia law for a husband to beat his wife. And so what do you make of Karzai?
Well, he's been a terrible disappointment. Mixed bag is a good term. The Sharia law was terrible. Certain changes have been made in it to reduce the misogyny that was at the basis of the law. But Karzai also agreed to the law on the elimination of violence against women, which is a very positive law. It's very strong. And it was written by women activists in Afghanistan, and he agreed to sign it. The problem with the law is that it's not implemented. So here you have a good example of the positive side of Karzai and the negative side of Karzai. The negative is the Sharia law. The positive is the law on the elimination of violence against women, and the negative is the fact that it's not implemented.
Well, let's get down to kind of the nub of the issues here as far as what's happening in Afghanistan, what should happen. One issue is whether the Karzai government should negotiate with the Taliban, whether the U.S. should support negotiations with the Taliban. What's your view of that?
One problem is that everything is so secret, it's hard really to know what's going on. Maybe he is negotiating with the Taliban. Maybe the United States is. It depends on which paper you read what day. Maybe they're not. From our point of view, negotiating with the Taliban is extremely dangerous. We don't trust them. Of course, there are many different groups of Taliban, so one might ask, which Taliban are you talking about? But just for the sake of this discussion, let's say there's a central Taliban group, and we're trying to negotiate with them. How can we possibly trust them? The Taliban have burned down hundreds of schools for girls in Afghanistan in the last several years. They shoot teachers. There is nothing in what they've been doing for the past year that tells us, for the past several years, that tells us that they've had a change of mind about women. That they'll stop using women as a strategy to keep the entire country on its knees, which is really what we believe their strategy, their treatment of women is boils down to.
Explain
it's
that.
It's not a religious thing.
Okay.
It's not religious. Because Islam, the Taliban know, and not all of them, but those at the head, know that Islam was a very advanced religion when it came to women's rights. Islam promotes educating women. Islam promotes women working, is in favor of women working. The religion is very different from what the Taliban have made of it. And it is our opinion that the Taliban are using the subjugation of women. It's almost a military strategy. If you get 50% of the population of a country on its knees, the rest of the country will follow. And so we're opposed to negotiating with the Taliban.
I'm speaking with Esther Heineman, who's on the board of directors of Women for Afghan Women. Well, if you oppose negotiating with the Taliban, what are the alternatives then?
The alternatives are for troops to remain in the country to keep keep security.
Really? You want Yes. U.S. troops to stay?
Yes, we do. And my organization, Women for Afghan Women, has had this opinion from the beginning. We've been called warmongers, which We're not in favor of war. We're opposed to war. But we are afraid that if the troops leave or when the troops leave, war will break out. There's a possibility that there'll be a civil war in Afghanistan, and the Taliban will open the floodgates. They'll pour in from Pakistan. Pakistan is very interested in getting control of Afghanistan, and a lot of Taliban are coming in from Pakistan. We're afraid there'll be regional unrest, and so we really feel, ironically, that the only way to keep peace in Afghanistan while it's developing is to have troops there to keep security.
But it doesn't seem to me that peace is developing there, and already we've lost 2,000 U.S. troops. We're spending $2 billion a week there, and U.S. troops have killed more than 7,000 civilians in Afghanistan. Yes. So, I mean, that is a kind of a horrific record to put on the other side of the scale.
We're worried that the alternative is a greater loss of life, and especially women. We employ 430 local Afghans, and they're all terrified. They're afraid they'll be killed when the troops leave by the Taliban. We have hundreds of women in our shelters. What's going to happen to them? They can't go home. When the troops leave, there's no place for them to go. They'll be on the streets, and they'll be murdered by the Taliban. I'm presenting a really very extreme version of what might happen. But what bothers us is that the American government and the Afghan government are not talking about these possibilities. They don't seem to be factoring in these possibilities in the decision to remove the troops. The claim that the Afghan army is ready to take on the security of the country, everybody that we talk to in Afghanistan laughs at this. It's nobody believes this. The idea that the Afghans want the troops out is simply not true. We have never found a single person, and we're all over the country. We're in 8 provinces. We have not talked to a single Afghan who says the troops should leave. They're quaking in their boots.
Well, it's hard for me to believe, pardon me, that you can't find a single person in Afghanistan who wants the U.S. troops to go.
We have not found...
There is the Afghan parliamentary... a member of parliament, former Malala Joya, feminist, who has been calling for the U.S. troops to go from the beginning, and especially now. She says it's easier to fight just one enemy, the Taliban, than 2 enemies, the U.S. and the Taliban.
Malala,
so there's one person.
Malala Joya does not live in Afghanistan. She lives safely in Europe. Malala Joya is the laughingstock of all feminists and activists that we know in Afghanistan. They despise her. They think she's very dangerous. And they felt this way about her from the very beginning.
But she was a brave woman. She stood up to the warlords in parliament and was exiled from the parliament.
She's a single voice among all the women we speak to in Afghanistan.
I believe there's another feminist parliamentarian who is for U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan as well. So there are women in leadership positions with followings among feminists who think the U.S. should go.
Yeah. Well, as I say, the people we speak to, all of our staff, all of our clients, other feminists do not want the troops to leave. It's a minority opinion among them.
You guys get some funding from the State Department at Women for Afghan Women. Does that strike you as a conflict of interest?
No. It doesn't. We use the money to help women in Afghanistan, and that's what the money is given to us for. And on what grounds would we not take this money? We have all of these facilities to help women. If we weren't helping these women, they'd be dead. We've saved hundreds of lives in Afghanistan.
I just wonder how you can make the case that the U.S. should stay. I mean, how can you make that case here when the American people are against the United States staying in Afghanistan by a lopsided margin of 2-1, I believe, at this point? And it's just, it seems like a no-win situation. Our troops aren't able to succeed militarily. I was just listening to a show about this on NPR. And so if the troops aren't able to prevail there militarily, and I wasn't for them being there in the first place anyway, after 11 years, it's clear that they're not able to prevail. So why keep them any longer? I mean, two-thirds of the country's in Taliban hands, according to some accounts.
Well, we did prevail at one time. We had most of the Taliban out, or the Taliban were not a threat to people in the country. So it, I'm not a military person. I think there's a conflict of interest. There's a disagreement on this topic in the government and in the military as to whether we could succeed. I'm only speaking from the point of view of an organization that has been in Afghanistan for 11 years, that has been expanding for 11 years, that has had an enormous success. And the fact is that Americans don't know about this. Americans see Afghanistan as a lost country, as a military, as a medieval a nation that doesn't want to advance into the modern age, that a country that has stood in the way of progress on women's rights and education for women. That's the way they see the country. And it's on ideas like that that they base their opinion that we should get out of there. What are we doing there? But they're basing that opinion on totally false ideas. Afghanistan has enormous possibilities. The people want education, and they want women's rights. Perhaps not the way women's rights exist in this country, but they are in favor of women's rights, and they help us out. So Americans are advancing this opinion based on information that simply isn't true. But this information comes from the media, and the government, the Obama administration, has not really educated Americans about the situation in Afghanistan, particularly the situation of women and what can be done there. Hillary Clinton has tried to do that, but not the president.
Speaking with Esther Heineman of Women for Afghan Women, I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine, and you're listening to Progressive Radio. Have you met Hillary Clinton? What's she like?
No, I haven't met her.
Okay. I mean, one thing the American people do understand is that Afghanistan's been the graveyard of empires, British Empire, Soviet Empire, seems to be the U.S. Empire. And so what is wrong about that observation?
Well, I guess nothing is wrong with it. The Afghans didn't defeat the Russians without our help, so to claim that the Afghans defeated the Russians is sort of ludicrous. Well, the Afghans destroyed their own country. The Afghan Mujahideen bombed Afghanistan till it was rubble. So they didn't care about their own country, the Mujahideen. So to elevate them to this position of military success is kind of ludicrous.
I'm struck in my mind by a comment, infamous comment now by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, in 1979, 1980, when some critic asked him, why are you funding these radical Muslim clerics in the Mujahideen? And you're right, Esther Heineman, it was only with U.S. help, Stinger missiles, for one thing, that allowed the Mujahideen to beat back the Soviets. And so he answered the critic by saying, well, what's a couple of crazed Muslims in comparison with the fall of the Soviet Empire? Now, that comment does not seem so clever here in 2011, does it?
No. Our experience is that, as I said before, Islam is not a religion that advances the subjugation of women or violence.
I mean, actually, under the Soviet puppet government there, women had a lot more rights than they did certainly after the fall of the Soviet supported government in Afghanistan. warlord government, and then, of course, no doubt after the Taliban took over.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
It's another irony of this whole whole sordid episode here in Afghanistan.
That's true, and another irony will be that if the predictions that we've made and that now many experts on Afghanistan are making about what's going to happen when the troops leave, if those predictions come true in any way, it will be ironic that the U.S. will have repeated the mistakes it made after the Soviets left Afghanistan and we abandoned the country. It'll be the same thing. It's a civil war and then the takeover by terrorist groups.
But it's such an untenable position right now with the U.S. troops there. I mean, the U.S. troops are sitting ducks. So some of the Afghan military, they're supposed to be our allies that we're training, are turning their guns on the U.S. troops. And it's hard to say to an American family whose son or daughter is over there that we should stay there, because if even our friends don't like us there, what in the world are we doing there? And also, we're killing innocent people there, and the death toll has been real high. So to say, well, the death toll may be higher next time, is a difficult calculus. And so I'm just wondering, why isn't it more desirable to try to have some agreement or negotiation with the Taliban, as hideous as some aspects of the Taliban are, and try to get a government that is a coalition government, if you can get some assurances that women won't be subjugated and oppressed in the way that they were before?
Because one wishes that this were possible. I hope we're wrong about this. And when the troops leave, there is some kind of negotiated settlement with the Taliban, and they enter the government, and they don't resume the tactics they used in years ago. That's what I hope. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, and I think that we're playing a very dangerous game with the lives of millions of women and children in the country. So I can't sit here with a solution. I'm not a military person. I'm not in favor of war, but I'm in favor of protecting 15 million women in a country that we've made a commitment to. And I'm not in favor of abandoning the country when there is so much evidence that the place will erupt.
Well, I appreciate hearing your perspective on this. I have a very different one. I think the United States has been there way too long and has not really helped the situation dramatically there, and I think we're in a no-win situation there now.
The situation in Afghanistan is much better now, incalculably better than it was when we first went into that country. Kabul is a thriving city. There are many cities in Afghanistan where there is security. People are entering businesses. Women are free to walk around. Children are in school. These are great improvements in what is really a short time. So to say we haven't, there haven't been any improvements is simply not true.
Well, I will only say that the other side of the ledger is quite heavy with death. But we're out of time. Esther Heineman, I appreciate you offering your perspective. She's on the board of directors of Women for Afghan Women. You can get that at womenforafghanwomen.org.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.